And I really enjoyed George's message this morning talking about who?
Daniel.
Okay, we didn't forget. We still have our short-term memories. Congratulations. And as we look at these Old Testament characters, we look at people in the Bible, and some people, there was a guy who went to a Bible study, and he just listened. He just listened. And finally, he closed his Bible and said, "I don't get it." And they said, "What do you mean you don't get it?" He said, "I thought the Bible was full of all these perfect people that we were supposed to be like." And they said, "No." And when we look at the people in the Bible, we're in good company. We are in good company. I don't know about you. I look at my life and I see two sides. I see there are sometimes I do things that somebody will say, "Well, that was a good thing." Okay, and this is more than making a good meal. You know, that I did something, I said something. You know, just the other day, I sat down with a guy. I said, "How's it going?" And he said, "Not good." I said, "Really? I appreciate your honesty. Would you mind telling me what's not good?" And he said, "I don't know what to do with our kids, our adult kids. I don't know about these kids. You know, they have no common sense." I know nobody here can relate to this, so just watch and listen to me rant. And so I said to him, "You know what? It's okay. It's okay. God still loves them. He loves you. And God is long-suffering. Wasn't he long-suffering with you and me? He's long-suffering with you." I was just able to encourage. That was on the good side. Okay? That was on the good side. But there was lots of stuff on the other side of the ledger where I got upset when somebody said something, when they didn't say something, when this guy cut me off. You know, I'm trying to go down to the beach and this big black SUV, okay, real long, windows are darkened. I don't know whether they can see out or not. You know, pulled out and I had to swerve. I was like, "What is wrong with you?" Because I've never done that. But, you know, what people are on both sides, even our political leaders. There was a recent piece done about Thomas Jefferson. Listen to how they talk about, you know, and who was Thomas Jefferson to us?
President.
He's a president. What else?
Constitution.
Constitution, and mostly he wrote a great deal of the Declaration of Independence, you know, and he has his, is he on the $5 bill? Or is that Lincoln? It's been so long since I've seen a five. So, you know, anyway, he's this big guy in our country, in our history. But was he perfect? Listen.
And I must say, after reading your book, Jefferson's words are extraordinary. They have moved the march of freedom along in ways that few other political philosophers ever have in the history of men and womankind. But at the same time, they are connected to a man who was abhorrent at best at times.
Deeply flawed man, a great man, but a deeply flawed man.
Did you hear that phrase? Not just flawed, deeply flawed man. And the interview goes on, and this author, his name is Tom Ricks. He's a historian, he's an author. He's a smart guy, and he studied his life. Listen to the things. He used to be a big Thomas Jefferson guy. But he then looked at his life and said, "Well, you know, there's that other side that I didn't know about."
So Thomas Jefferson, I would say incredibly important, and if only for the Declaration of Independence, a great document, both great literature and a great political document. That said, three things that really bothered me about him and led me to really reassess my opinion of him in my research. First, he was a lousy governor of Virginia. He was asleep at the wheel during the revolution, winds up getting chased out of Monticello by British troops, riding up Carter Mountain behind it. Second, he's kind of a hypocrite about the country. He wants to have the West explored. Yet he himself never goes west of the Blue Ridge. It's not that he doesn't like to travel. When he lives in France, he travels all over. And third, and most of all, worst of all, on slavery. Now, I wanted to defer to the expert here, but my opinion is he was at best a hypocrite, a man who dreamed of liberty while living on the sweat of others, a man who talked a good game when he was in Paris, but towed the slavery power line when he was back in Virginia.
Thomas Jefferson, this great guy, greatly contributed, but also greatly flawed.
Sounds like our modern day politicians.
Maybe it sounds like our modern day people. You know, I look at myself and I think, you know, I like to, you know, what we're told to have a good assessment of ourselves, clearly, you know, a good opinion. And I look and I say, I'm deeply flawed too. And that's part of the puzzle and when I see that, I get this anxiety that says, you know, myself. And what is our definition of anxiety? That, remember, we have these pieces in our lives, this puzzle. Our life is a puzzle. And anxiety comes when I'm responsible for putting all the pieces together, where I'm responsible for making it all happen, for making my life and the life around those around me good. And that brings anxiety. And we see this same thing, this same deeply flawed idea when we look at people in the Bible. The people in the Bible were not just flawed, they were deeply, deeply flawed. And we're going to look at a couple of them. You know, the first one we're going to look at is Father Abraham, right? The father, you know, the great guy that God calls and he says, go to a land I will show you. And he goes. And I was thinking, wow, what a great man of faith, right? Would you do that? How hard would it be for you? God said, get up and go. And I'm not telling you where the end game is. How many of us would get up and go? Not a lot of us. But he did. But yet, when he came to the land, a certain land, when he moved on to the region of the Negev, and he stayed there, and he said about Sarah, what did he say? She is my sister. His wife, he said, is his sister. Why? Because he was afraid. She was a beautiful woman, and they thought, beautiful woman, husband. I want the woman, what do? We get rid of the husband. So to save his own neck, he lies. It's like, just like this scene from the first Star Wars.
Yes?
Our scout ships have reached Dantooine. They found the remains of a rebel base, but they estimate that it has been deserted for some time. They are now conducting an extensive search of the surrounding systems.
She lied. She lied to us.
I told you she would never consciously betray the rebellion.
Terminate her.
She lied! She lied! What a shock, right? No, she was protecting it. But for the same reason, Abraham lied about Sarah, his wife, to protect his own skin. He lied. And that apple didn't fall far from the tree, because Sarah and Abraham have a son who? Isaac. Isaac gets married and then travels, and you'll never guess what Isaac says about his wife. Shocking. When he met these people about his wife, he said what? She is my... Where did he get that line? He's just quoting his father. And why? Because he was afraid. He thought, the men of this place might kill me on account of Rebecca, because she's She's a hot mama. She's a hot hoochie-coochie mama. And so these great men of faith, they lied. Moses is the grandson of Pharaoh. He grew up with a silver spoon in his mouth. He had everything, everything. And yet he grows up, he sees, he goes out to see his people, the Jews, and he sees a foreman beating up on one of them, right? What does he do? He says, he doesn't just look at, murder him. First of all, he does what? He looks this way and that. Why do you look this way and that? See who's watching, right? And then what does he do? He kills him, and then he hides him in the sand. This great man of faith that God uses is a murderer. He's taking vengeance on his own. And he tries, first of all, he doesn't want anybody to see him do it, and then he tries to hide the evidence. Sound like anybody you know? They did something wrong, they try to cover it up. I've done that. Moses does that. And then later on, God tells Moses to say, there's no water. So God tells Moses, go over there and speak to the rock, and water will come out. And so Abraham takes the people over there to the rock, and he doesn't talk to the rock. He talks to the people. He says to the people, and look at, this is a great way to win friends and influence people, right? When you call them what? You rebels. Oh, isn't that a great way to start a conversation? You rebels. Oh, must who? We bring what? Where's God? Where's God? Doesn't mention God's provision at all. Out of this rock. And then Moses raises his arm, and what does he do? He strikes the rock, not just once, twice. And you might say to yourself, well, what's the harm? Water came out, and that was it. But it was a disrespect for God, and God was watching. And God comes to him later and says, he says, you didn't what? You didn't trust me. It wasn't enough to speak to the rock. It wasn't enough to trust me that you had to beat the rock with your stick. Now, Kemet, we're friends, right? We're friends. You're going to be honest with me? Is beating a rock with a stick really going to make water come out? No. But he was angry. He got angry and murdered. He got angry. You read the life of Moses, and you find one word about him personally, anger, angry. And because of that, he can't go into the land. Now, you know, he's not going to be able to go into, to cross the border to get into the promised land that God had made the promise to him. You see, did God love Moses? Yes. Did God use Moses? Yes. When Moses crossed the line in a significant way, was he forgiven? Yes. But there were consequences. And that consequence was he can't cross, go over into the land. You see, he couldn't go. Forgiveness? Yes. Consequences? Sometimes. And the consequences, there's not always a way out. This was one of those consequences where God says, I'm done. No further, no more. And we see this also in the life of Elijah. Remember, Elijah prays and it stops raining. Elijah prays, fire comes down and consumes the sacrifice and the stones and the wood and the water, and there's this great revival. And then Queen Jezebel says, a few words. She tweets. She gets on her phone and she tweets that we're coming to get you. And so what does Elijah do? Does he stand up for God? Does he say, you know, I'm going to stand for God? Is that what he says? No. He puts his tail between his legs and runs, remember? And where does he run? He runs out into the desert with a servant. He then leaves a servant behind. This is what a broom tree looks like. He runs for his life. He leaves his servant. And then he sat down under the broom tree. Now, if somebody was sitting underneath of a broom tree, is it going to be easy to find them? No. I mean, it's low. It's not like, an oak tree, a live oak tree. No, the branches are down on the ground. You get under there, you're hidden. He's hiding. He's hiding from Jezebel. He's hiding from Jezebel's soldiers. And maybe he's hiding from God. Because what's his prayer? What's his prayer? I have had how much? Enough. You ever pray that prayer? I have had enough. And now I pray to die. I've had enough. Take my life. I'm no better. And you see, we could go through more and more examples of these great men and women of faith. We could go on and on and on. But we're going to now transition to say, well, what about us? What about in our modern day? What did they say about Jefferson? Deeply flawed? What about us? What about our leaders? What about us as individuals and as a community? This is, I have a quote. You know who Ken Burns is? He's the guy that does all those big specials on PBS, like the Civil War, and about baseball and country music. He's a real clever guy. Listen to what Ken Burns has to say. He's doing an interview after he did a special on the Roosevelts. Listen to what Ken Burns says.
History is tragedy, not melodrama. In melodrama, all heroes have perfect virtue. All villains are perfectly bad, but nothing is like that. All of the Roosevelts, including Eleanor, were deeply wounded people, deeply flawed people, along with their great strengths. In fact, we live in this superficial media culture in which we presume that heroism is perfection, and it isn't.
Did you hear? I love that phrase, superficial media perfection, right? The people, they got to have a perfect image, a perfect life, a perfect resume. And it's a lie. We're all deeply flawed. We have pluses and minuses. Some of our minuses are worse than others, but we've all got them. We're all deeply flawed. And we see this in the life of Moses' sister, Miriam. Miriam, they've come out of the land of Egypt and they have a victory dance and Miriam celebrates, but then later on, Miriam rebels against Moses. How come, God, you're only speaking through Moses? Why don't you speak through me? You see, there's two kinds of rebellion. There's the active rebellion of doing what's wrong, and then there's the passive rebellion of not doing what's right. Both are equally terrible. And this happened to Miriam. When Miriam says these things about going against Moses, God comes down on her like a ton of bricks and makes her have leprosy. And listen to the words that are spoken about her after the leprosy. The Lord replied, this is God speaking, by the way. This is God's assessment of Miriam's upbringing. If her father had spit in her face, she would not have been in disgrace. If her father had just done spit in her, you know, I think about spitting in the face of my kids. He didn't discipline her. And so she went down a certain path. You see, I'm a passive kind of guy. I really am. I given the choice, I choose to do nothing. And this happened yesterday. Yesterday, we're up in Lakeland in one of these antique malls, the one that's right across from the Lakeland Mall. Really great place, lots of Disney stuff. And I'm in there, I'm having a great time with our family, and I see this person. And I think, wow. You ever see somebody and just go, wow? I don't know what makes you go, wow. But this person made me go, wow. Okay, and it's not just because their hair had like five different colors in it. That's okay, you know. Or they had top to toe bright tattoos. That's okay. But some of the scenes of the characters on their body were really disturbing. But what really got me is she had on a maroon t-shirt with black letters. And you know what it said? Satan loves you. And you know what I said to her? Nothing. There is a way to go up to her in a friendly way. Say, excuse me, how are you? I hope you're having a nice day. But I'm just curious. Could you tell me about what you're saying with your shirt? I'd really like to know. And I said nothing. Now, I'm not supposed to go up to every person. I get that, and neither are you. But I chose to do nothing. And choosing to do nothing is just as bad as doing something when it's wrong. I mean, we have this in the life of Eli. Eli had a couple of sons, and he didn't discipline them. And look what's said. He said that Eli, he's going to judge his family because of their sins, and his sons blasphemed against God. The sons blaspheme against God, but what did Eli do? He failed to restrain them. That's being passive. And it's as big of a sin as if you go and do something harmful, purposefully. He failed to restrain them. He was passive. He paid the price, and so did his sons. But, you know, God uses wounded and broken people, just like Moses, just like Abraham, just like Eli, just like you and me. He uses these people because remember Elijah? Elijah went and hid, right, under the broom tree and prayed that God would kill him. Sounds like a pretty bad thing to do, right? But could God still use him? We have in the book of James, remember Eli, he was what? Elijah, he was what? A man who? Like you and me. This guy is just like you and me. Yeah, he had a failure in his life. But he prayed earnestly and it didn't rain. 3.5 years later, he prayed again and it rained. God used Elijah in spite of being flawed, deeply flawed. He can use people, if he can use Elijah, and what kind of guy was Elijah? What does it say? Just like us. No better, no worse. He uses people like you and me. And Elijah didn't stay in that place. He had a he had a big spiritual failure. He had a big moral failure. But he didn't stay there. He moved on. He got and sought forgiveness. and moved on in his life with the Lord and the people around him and the nation. We see that. We even see, even now, I'm going to be careful here. Jesus was born fully God, fully man. He's like us in every respect except one. And what's that? He was sin. He didn't sin. But Jesus still grew. He grew physically. He didn't. I love some of the Renaissance paintings. They have this little baby pop up with an adult head. And, you know, they put the lights around him. You know, but Jesus wasn't like it. Jesus came out like a kid, a regular kid. And he grew and changed and became mature. Listen, we're told about him in Luke. This happened. This verse comes right after the scene. Remember, he's lost for 3 days and his parents find him. And he says, and this is what happened after that. Jesus did what? Continued to grow. How? In body and mind. And he grew also in the love of the Lord. Now, this is hard to understand. You see, Jesus, perfect God, he didn't change. But Jesus, fully man, he had to grow. He had to mature, not only in body, but in mind and spirit and his love for the Lord. And that's a call for you and me to do the same thing. This is how this scene was portrayed in The Chosen.
Why is everyone so upset?
Mary, she was in there.
She was supposed to be riding in the caravan with Uncle Abita.
I was supposed to be with my father.
Then why weren't you?
I was.
Teaching when I found him. The rabbis, the scribes, the scholars, they could not believe their ears. They barely let us leave.
Didn't you know I must be in my father's house?
It is too early for all this.
If not now, when?
Just help us get through all of this with you.
Maybe we should get going before they make a formal inquiry, huh? Jesus, please don't do that again, huh?
Yes, Abba.
He grew. If Jesus needed to grow as a person, in his love for the Lord, and in his wisdom, and in how he shared, don't we? We're a little older. We have all the advancements of technology, but you and I still need to grow. We need to change. We need to be saying, I'm not going to be satisfied with not saying anything anymore. I'm going to figure out a way to be able to, for me personally, to gently and in a friendly way talk about faith in Christ to anybody. And to be able to stand up with respect for what's right. There is so much junk out there. Would you agree that there's junk out there? Look on your phone. You want some junk? You need to get your fill of junk for the day. Put some junk in your trunk. Look on the internet. What a load of stuff. The ones that get me, I'm sorry, I'm going to get on my soapbox. You mind if I get on my soapbox? I'm getting on my soapbox, and I'm up front so I get to say what I want. So the one thing that really gets me is says, God guarantees you blessings. Pray this prayer, do this, and you will be blessed. What a lot of horse hockey. It's nonsense. Yes, there is blessing, but where? In eternity. What did Jesus say to his disciples about following him? He said, in this world, you're going to have what? Trouble, problems, disappointment, pain. But Jesus doesn't stop there. There's no period. There's a comma, which means there's more coming. And what does he say? He says, I have overcome the world. So we can be with Jesus and say, you know, this world really sucks. Do you mind me saying it that way? Is that okay? It really does. But Jesus says, I've overcome the world. Are we going to allow him to overcome the world in and through us, to change us? We're told, we're commanded to do this. Paul says this, we're to do what? Examine yourselves to see if your faith is genuine. Test yourselves. Surely you know that Jesus Christ is among you. If not, you have failed the test of genuine faith. Examine ourselves. When I think back on that incident, I'm examining myself. I'm taking a look to be presently and actively testing. Now, this isn't to get put ourselves on a guilt trip. It's to get better. I have made some really terrible pies in my day, okay? I really have. Trust me. You know, the only thing they were good for was to be put in the trash can. But guess what? I've practiced. I've changed the way I make them. I've got a way that now works. And I make really good crust. I really do. And I'm not bragging. It is. It's a butter crust. It's flaky. It's terrific. It's not my recipe. It's from someone else. But I've practiced it. I looked at the way I was doing it and said, guess what? This isn't working. And what's insanity? To keep doing it that same way and expect the pie crust to be different, right? It doesn't happen that way. So we've got to examine ourselves. It's time for us to be examining ourselves. Even, I don't care where you are in your walk, whether it's a new thing, you've been around Jesus for a while, or maybe you've known him since, you know, you were knee-high to a grasshopper. It's still time to be examining ourselves and looking to say, Jesus, because I love you, I want to do better. I want to be more pleasing to you. Why would I go to the trouble of trying to figure out how to make a pie crust? Because, no, I do like pie, but that's not the reason. It's because I wanted to please the one I love. Marianne likes pie. So I kept trying, and she was so patient with me. How's this one? Oh, it's terrific. Kept trying. Trying recipes, found it. I want to please the one. Remember, George talked about Daniel, right? Daniel didn't do that because he said, oh, I got these laws and rules, I got it. No, I want to please the one I love. I want to please the one who loves me. And Moses had that anger problem. I've got an anger problem. I think we all got an anger problem. How are we going to let it rule our lives? Are we going to be like Red Pollard? Red Pollard was the jockey for a horse, Seabiscuit. He lost his first race. This is the scene from the movie after he loses his first race.
What the hell were you thinking?
He fouled me. What am I supposed to do? Let him get away with that?
Well, yeah, when he's 40-1.
He almost put me in the rail.
Well, did he? Look, we had a plan.
He fouled me, Tom. What am I supposed to do? He cut me off. He fouled me!
Son. What are you so mad at?
What a great line. What a great question. When you run into people who are angry or bitter, with respect, what are you so mad at? And we need to ask that about ourselves. What are the things that tick us off? And I know we all got it, right? We all got that point, that thing, whatever it is, that just, you know, pushes the button for, and our response is the nuclear option, right? We hit the button, the ICBMs in our lives go up. What are we so mad at? For me, I can only talk about me. For me, it's that my rights have been violated. Somebody took something away from me. I deserved it. I deserved something and they took it. Or they didn't let me have it. That brings that out in me. What is it that brings it out in you? Moses was an angry person, always, always, always flying off the handle. What was he mad at? We can't ask him, but we can ask ourselves. What are we mad at? And I'm here to tell you that Jesus, whatever it is, Jesus died for that on the cross, fully paid for that. It doesn't mean whatever happened to you was right. I'm not defending that. But he says, I'm going to use it for my glory. Daniel was thrown into a lion's pit, right? Hey, praise the Lord and pass the lions, right? No. He was thrown into a pit, a dark place. And all he had done was what? The right thing. He didn't get mad. Remember when the king came back the next morning? Remember how he answered the king? Hey, idiot up there! You made the mistake. Is that what he said? No, he said what? May the king live forever. He understood that there was something more going on. It's not easy. I don't say it's easy. But think about Jesus. Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane. What happens? One of his best friends betrays him. That happened to you? He's then arrested, chained, forced, trial after trial after trial, eventually found guilty. He's whipped. They put that crown of thorns on him, and then he's got to carry his own cross. What has he done? Nothing. But he did something. He did do something. He took your sin and my sin and the sin of the world on himself. That's why he took it. And if he could take that for me, maybe, just maybe, I could take a little thing that upsets me. And why? To point people to Christ. Because he's the solution for this world and all eternity. For the people who make us mad, for the disappointment and the failures. He's the one. It's time to let it go and give it to Jesus. Would you pray with me? Our Father and our God, I thank you that you are King, you are guide, you are Lord. You are above all, and that you took your anger and put it on Jesus. It should have been on us, but you put it on Jesus and he took it. And he took it all the way until he could say it was finished. And then he came out of the tomb, risen, and sits now with you. And we worship you, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Forgive us for our being short with ourselves, with the people around us. You have been so long-suffering and patient with us. We thank you for that. Continue to change us. Help us examine ourselves before you, to speak for you and live for you in Jesus' name. Amen.